Blog Talk Radio.
Friday going. A lot of interesting stuff to talk about today. We'll get to the terror attack probably at the beginning of the second block. So that's the downer news of the day, of course. I think it happened right before I came on air yesterday. I didn't have enough time to gather all the facts, though, and get all the information. So it's a good thing I waited a day, because now we have a lot more actual data to share with you on that, so we'll discuss that. We also have Andrea Tantaros of Fox News talks about the Iran deal, gets absolutely, positively everything wrong. Everything wrong. I can't wait to discuss that. What else we got? We're going to be all over the map today. It's an emotional roller coaster. Another downer story is a 28-year-old black woman gets arrested, winds up dead. The cops say it's a suicide. That's a questionable claim. We'll discuss that. And good news when it comes to marijuana, I think they haven't found a single thing that it doesn't help medically. I'm serious, man. Apparently, like, how many studies have we covered where it's like marijuana cures this problem and that disease and this issue? We got another one today to add to the list, and it's one that I never would have thought of. And Republicans in South Carolina gave the worst example I've ever seen of false equivalence. It's beyond comical. They think that taking down a slave memorial is the same thing as taking down the Confederate flag. They're outraged that we have memorials in the South to commemorate slavery. So they're trying to do the false equivalence and say, well, take that. I'm offended by that, just like the black people are offended by the Confederate flag. Oh, it's such an incredible story. We'll discuss that and much more. A lot of stuff to get to. So busy Friday. Let's kick it off here with the Iran issue. I want to scoot right over to Fox News right off the bat. Fox News host Andrea Tantaros ranted about the nuclear deal that's now done with Iran, and she got virtually every single thing wrong.
The Saudis have made it known that they also are seeking a bomb, the same thing with Israel. This just expedites things. I mean, the White House said over and over, we would rather have no deal than a bad deal. That's not the case. This is a bad deal, and essentially what we did is give them $140 billion in ransom. And people say, oh, it's not ransom.
But aren't they going to get a bomb anyway?
Let me finish. Of course it was ransom. $140 billion, and we didn't get our hostages. And in fact, not only did we enable them to make the bomb, we rewarded them for making the bomb, and they're going to use that money and the money they get from loading their oil onto the markets to fund terrorism against us and against Israel. The deal is asinine, it's insane, it's ludicrous, and if anyone with a functioning brain in the U.S. Senate votes for this thing, they should be voted out of office
by
their
constituents.
Okay. Now, the first thing that popped in my mind as I was listening to all that, I started thinking back to all the times that people were calling for news anchors to be fired. So whether it's Brian Williams for exaggerating and lying about a story when he was in the Middle East covering a war, whether it's Bill O'Reilly, who just made up like 6 or 7 different stories, just got caught in stone-cold lies, was busted, or whether it's a situation like Martin Bashir, for example, where he was going after Sarah Palin And he kind of made an argument that somebody should shit in her mouth. It was obvious hyperbole. You know, he was going over the top to be provocative, but maybe it went a little too far, and people were like, enough, you know, you should be fired. That's fucked up. And it struck me that this is the real kind of stuff that people on news channels should be fired for. Now, don't get me wrong, outright lying, that's something you should be fired for. But what we're looking at here is just inaccuracy after inaccuracy, or I should say inaccurate point after inaccurate point after inaccurate point. And to the point where it's everything you said is untrue. Everything you said is incorrect. So isn't this something that's a fireable offense? Because bottom line, it's not even like, oh, you know, we're infringing on her free speech if we fire her or anything like that. No, no, no. She's just not doing her job. You did not do your job properly. You're discussing an issue, and you got every single thing dead wrong. I mean, that's like we're having a conversation about World War II, and somebody is insistent that it was Japan that dropped a nuclear bomb on New York City and on Los Angeles. That's what this is the equivalent of. She just took everything, flipped it exactly on its head, and says it in a very arrogant and confident way. And everybody's going to think who's listening to this, well, I mean, she must be right. She seems pretty passionate about this. But again, it is absolutely, positively ahistorical, and it's incorrect. So I'll give you the facts to prove it here. In the preamble and general provisions of the deal, so she said this not only enables Iran to create a bomb, it rewards them for making a bomb. That's what she said. Well, in the preamble and general provisions of the deal, part 3 on page 2, the very first line on that page, it says, Iran reaffirms that under no circumstances will Iran ever seek, develop, or acquire any nuclear weapons. So the deal says the exact opposite. But you go out there and make the point that's untrue, why should I not fire you? Isn't that a perfect fireable offense? You were incorrect. You're incorrect while discussing something as serious as nuclear weapons. Nuclear weapons! That's inexcusable, man. That's inexcusable. And the other point she makes, well, it's like we gave them billions of dollars in ransom. Why is that untrue? We're not giving them billions of dollars. It's their own goddamn money. So we're just lifting the sanctions and getting rid of the embargo and doing it at a gradual pace when they prove that they're meeting their terms of the deal. So if I go up to you and I freeze your fucking bank account, and then a decade later or a few years later, I say, okay, I'm going to release some of your money back to you. Is that me paying you a ransom? No, it's you getting your own goddamn money back. See, again, when somebody speaks in this loose a way and what they're saying is just factually incorrect, that's not something that's excusable when you're supposed to be in the news business. The news business is supposed to be about data and facts and information and history. And what you're doing is you're just going out there, taking your opinion, which is fuck Iran, they've never done anything right ever, and America's the best, and Israel's always right about everything, and you're just hammering home that talking point even though it's totally untrue. And then I dare anybody on that panel, if any of them had the balls, call her out. Just say, like when she says, for example, you know, oh, Iran, state-sponsored terrorism. That's what they're going to do. Give me one example of state-sponsored terrorism that Iran paid for. Crickets. You think she'd be able to answer? She wouldn't be able to answer that. There's no fucking way she'd be able to answer that. The best they have is maybe, maybe not, because it hasn't been proven, but we suspect that Iran is helping fund the Shia Houthi rebels in Yemen. And by the way, for the record, do I even care if the fucking Houthi rebels take over Yemen? I don't like the Houthis. In fact, I dislike them. But if we're talking about the broader Sunni-Shia war, you know who else is very active in Yemen? Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda are the Sunni fundamentalists. So it's either Al-Qaeda or the Houthis. Should I be so angry if the Houthis take over certain parts of the territory? I don't give a fuck. Do you give a fuck? But see, that's it. You think she knows? You think she could tell you that? Of course she has. She's probably never heard of the fucking Houthis in her entire life. She can't tell you anything about the Sunni-Shia divide in the Middle East. In her mind, notice, you're always going to see this with a lot of conservative pundits. They're going to conflate, as Glenn Beck did the other day, and as others will do, they're going to conflate, Netanyahu does this, ISIS and Iran. In fact, Netanyahu went further. He usually says, well, they're the same. Just recently, when the deal was announced, he said, actually, Iran is worse than ISIS. See, what are they trying to do? They're trying to conflate in your mind, if you're ignorant, they're all Muslims, Muslims bad, fight the Muslims. What they're leaving out, what they're omitting, is the biggest fact in the conversation, which is the Shias in Iran are fighting ISIS. It's the Shia militias that are the biggest bulwark against ISIS taking over more territory. You want the Shias to do better in that area. You want them to win the fight, believe me. That doesn't mean that the Shia militias are good or that the theocratic government in Iran is good. It just means that it's less bad than the alternative. You know, so Iran does not have anything beyond, you know, regional ambitions. They don't have this idea of a global caliphate that they're actively pushing for and trying to get. Al-Qaeda does. ISIS does. So to try to pretend like they're the same, no, they're actually your natural ally in fighting ISIS. So yet again, man, you think of all the people who were fired on cable news for saying shit that wasn't nearly as bad as this. And then you think about whether or not Andrea Tantaro should still have a job. You got every single thing dead wrong in a conversation about nuclear weapons. An area where accuracy is absolutely necessary and needed. Why should I let you continue to have a job? It's got nothing to do with free speech. It's got nothing to do with me disagreeing with her. It has to do with the fact that your job as a so-called news person is to comment on the news and give data and information, and you did the exact opposite. You got everything wrong. I don't know what's a more perfect fireable offense. Okay. Now, of course, the sad reality is what? Whoever Fox News would replace her with would be just as bad, if not worse. In fact, that's the most ridiculous part about Fox News, is that that's the fucking point. There is the goddamn point. The point is to lie. The point is to deceive. The point is to give you bad information. Okay. And again, man, I feel like I have to bring this up every time. You don't have to believe Iran when they say, we're not going to have a nuclear weapon. We promise to never get a nuclear weapon. You don't have to believe them. You don't. You really don't. But you have to understand that in the deal, there are checks by the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency. So the deal is not based on whether or not you trust Iran. The deal is based on verification. And furthermore, again, as I say all the time, you think they should trust us? How do they know we're not going to violate the deal? Seriously, think about that. We're the government that's been meddling in their internal affairs forever. And we should just be, inherently, innately trustworthy? We should just expect everybody should look at us like, oh, they're Americans. They always mean well. Do we? We're the ones that did the CIA torture. We're the ones that just invaded a country that didn't fucking attack us and stayed there for over a decade and killed hundreds of thousands of civilians. Are we so trustworthy? You tell me. All right, now. I don't want to do it, man, but I got to do it. I got to get wonky on you. Credit to my buddy, by the way. You might want to check him out on Twitter. @austerity_ Is it an underscore? Just type in austerity sucks to Twitter, and you'll he'll pop up. So we have an update on the Greece situation for you guys. The Prime Minister, Alex Tsipras, decided to take the bailout offered by the Troika, of course, the European Commission and the European Central Bank and the International Monetary Fund. So lawmakers in Greece had to approve it, and they did, even though there was a revolt within the Syriza party, which Tsipras belongs to. There were many members of his party who said this is defeating the whole purpose of why we were elected. Why would we do this? Germany also had to approve it, and they did. So Reuters reports on this. They say, quote, European Union finance ministers also approved $7.6 billion in bridge loans to keep Greece afloat, allowing it to make a bond payment to the ECB next Monday and clear its arrears with the International Monetary Fund. Deputy Finance Minister Dimitris Mardas said the ECB support would allow banks to reopen 3 weeks after they were closed when Athens imposed capital controls to prevent a flood of withdrawals collapsing the banking system. cash withdrawals currently limited to 60 euros a day are likely to remain restricted. So I'm sure you guys remember in the height of the chaos, they put capital controls. They put restrictions on how much money you can take out of the bank. Because, of course, the way any banking system works, they don't actually have all the money there. So if everybody were to go there at once and say, I want my money, the whole system comes crumbling down because their response would be, don't really have it. Now, here's what I think is a really, really interesting part of the article. They say, quote, the IMF highlighted the issue of debt relief in a report released this week, saying the only alternatives to deep upfront haircuts, a.k.a. more austerity, would be for European creditors to grant Athens a 30-year debt service holiday on present and future loans or make large annual fiscal transfers to the Greek budget. All those options are unpalatable to German and other Eurozone creditor governments that do not want to tell their taxpayers that money lent to Greece is not coming back. So that's really interesting. So it's almost like they're admitting, here's what the real solution would be, but we don't want to do it. To be fair, I mean, do I blame German taxpayers? If they're against the idea of doing any more bailouts or helping Greece at all? No, I don't blame the taxpayers. It gets a lot more complicated than just to point your finger at the people of Germany or other nations and to say, they're to blame. Not necessarily. But as you can see here, they're letting you know, here's what like a real solution is, how we can actually fix it, and just not going to do that because it's not really politically tenable to do so. So this has led to a backlash in Greece with some protests and some riots because the people hate the deal. Again, that's the whole reason why they voted for the Syriza government, to not get a deal like this. And I actually hate the deal as well. And I hate it because it's doomed for failure. All you're doing is kicking the can down the road a few years, and then we'll be facing the same problem again. So how do I know that? Some people might hear me say that and say, how do you know? Do you know for sure? Well, we know because this basically the same plan failed twice already. So there were two rounds of austerity already, and Greece did everything that they were told to do, and the austerity made their economy worse. They still have over 20% unemployment. In fact, according to the OECD, Greece ranked number one in reform responsiveness, which means that when they were told to do stuff by the IMF, when they were told to do stuff by the central bank, they did it, they implemented the things they were told to implement, and the economy got worse. Understand, this is a fact. All the predictions made by the Troika were wrong. In fact, let me show you a chart on that here. So for everybody listening on the live show and you can't see this, what you see is what they said would happen to the economy once Greece implemented the reforms in the first two rounds of austerity, and then what actually happened with the economy. So all of their predictions, their best case scenario, what they think is going to happen, or their worst case scenario here, those are all better than what actually ended up happening. So what is Greece going to implement this time around for round three of austerity? Well, let me go ahead and give you some of the provisions. There's going to be a 10% rise in what's called sin taxes, which is it could be a tax on alcohol, cigarettes, and fuel. There's a 10% additional rise for all imported cars. The number of public-owned companies is going to be reduced from 6,000 to 2,000. There's going to be an 8% cut on public sector allowances, a 3% cut for public sector utilities employees, a return of a special tax on high pensions. Yet again, they're going to increase the retirement age. The women's retirement age is going to be increased from 60 to 65. The average retirement age for public sector workers will be increased from 61 to 65. Now, remember, in the past, they had also upped the retirement age when they were told to do so. So, yet again, this is more austerity, more of the same, and yet somehow people are expecting that there's going to be some sort of a different result, even though This is on top of two other austerity packages. Again, Greece implemented everything they were told to implement, and the economy did not get better. So here's where some people would respond and say, well, they already got hundreds of billions of dollars in loans already, so it's got to be their fault. But number one, like I just told you, they did everything that you asked them to do, and it didn't work. So that's the most important point. I'm going to keep coming back to that because it's true. And then number two, 90% of the loans went to pay back private banks. So as my buddy pointed out on this, some people are saying or comparing this to the Marshall Plan. They're saying that the bailout of Greece is like the Marshall Plan. But it's more like the opposite of the Marshall Plan because, I mean, could you imagine how bad the Marshall Plan would have been if 90% of the money just went to pay off creditors and not actually to invest in the European economy? It would have been a disaster. So a good way to think of this, man, think of it within the context of the U.S., for example. So if the entire state of Texas goes under, the entire state, it's not like the federal government would just sit there and say, well, you're on your own. No, they would be forced to act, and they would act. Okay? But if you compare that to the EU situation, the whole idea of the EU in practice is supposed to be, it's supposed to function more kind of like a United States type system. But what happens is you have deep disagreements between the Northern Europeans and the Southern Europeans, and the Northerners look down on the Southerners, and they just want to point their finger at Greece nonstop and say, look, it's all your fault, and we're going to continue to punish you, we're going to continue to implement austerity, and then if the economy doesn't work, it's still your fault. But think about that, man. You told them what to do, they listened to you, and it still didn't fucking work. What does that tell you? It tells you that your approach is not functioning properly. And again, there are, you can point the finger at many people and many groups here for doing the wrong thing, but just know that what they're saying is the solution is not the solution. This bailout is not going to be a solution. It's just kicking the can further down the road. We're going to be right back to where we are right now in a few years. And then, you know, we'll be discussing yet again doing something which is not the solution. I mean, at this point, if, you know, I was Tsipras, what I would have done is I would have had a backup plan ready to get off the euro, to use the drachma, and to go at it solo, if you will. Because if they're not going to give you debt relief, they're not going to give you the same deal that they got multiple times in their history, Germany. Well, then you know that they're not interested in your well-being. Essentially, what they're doing is, wringing you dry, okay? Taking you through the ringer, actually, is a better way of putting it. And they're acting like they're the saviors when they're continuing to drag you down. Well, again, the answer is going to be you got to get off the euro, you got to go to the drachma, and look, you have to get some form of, wiping that debt slate clean, because all they're doing is continuing to push austerity, all they're doing is continuing to prolong the problem, and the entire time the people of Greece are suffering, over 20% unemployment we're talking about here, over 20% unemployment, and these guys are saying the solution is, hey, you need to do more cuts, less public sector spending. What, have we learned nothing from the lessons of history? I mean, look at what happened during the Great Depression here in America. What happened is we needed FDR to come in and do the New Deal and do big-time public spending and, yes, redistribution of wealth in order to get public works programs and in order to get people back on their feet. And that's what finally worked and got the economy out of the depression. We're looking at a situation in Greece where it's depression-like conditions, over 20% unemployment. And people are saying the solution is do more cuts in public spending, raise the retirement age even more, and point your finger at the people of Greece even more. Would you point your finger at the people in America when they were going through the Great Depression and say, hey, it's your own goddamn fault. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. This ain't no bigger economic problem. This isn't a systemic problem. Yes, it is a systemic problem, and it needs to be treated as such, and you need to fix it, as opposed to sitting there idly by, watching the Greek people suffer, and saying, let's do more of the same and prolong the problem. Okay. I got to take a break, man. Let's take a break, and then when we come back, We have Donald Trump continuing to act like a petulant child because, of course. Then we have the terror attack in Tennessee, which I'll break down for you. Then we have Scott Walker is going to respond to that terror attack in the worst way possible. You're not going to want to miss this stuff, guys. Stay right there. Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show. We'll be right back.
You back, sir. Hey, yo, Tim, drop the beat, fuck. Hey, slide over here, talk to the board. What are you drinking? I'ma buy the ball. I was just thinking of seeing you tomorrow. Waking up with no panties, no bra. I ain't being nasty, I'm just being for real. Let me take off my belt and give you the whipple pill. Yeah, hear about what I do in the streets, but you gon' love what I do in the sheets. Ha. Hey, baby, what's your story? You got the goods, plain to see. The kind that I keep a brother on the scene. And I'm so curious. After the club, hang out with me. Valentino is sure to please. But now let's have an apple martini and get to know each other.
Alright, we're back, people, and let's change gears here a little bit and focus on some morons. How about that? Ah, fuck, I thought I had a clip for this, and I do not. That's alright. No biggie. Donald Trump is continuing to act like a petulant child even though he's running for president and he should be acting like a serious human being. And he lashed out on Twitter, because that's what he does, at a couple of high-profile Republicans yesterday, because he can't help himself. I mean, again, the dude is running for president, and he's like, I want to get into Twitter wars. I feel embarrassed when I get into a Twitter war, and I'm a fucking YouTube host. There's no prestige attached to that. This dude's running for president. He's tweeting at people and shit, getting angry. So first, he went after John McCain, because McCain said that Trump is going to rile up the crazies in the right-wing base with his candidacy. I think that's totally true. But Trump responded with this, quote, the thousands of people that showed up for me in Phoenix were amazing Americans. Senator John McCain called them crazies. Must apologize! I love the ridiculous notion that anytime somebody says something you don't like, they must apologize. You might not like it, Donald, but it's totally true. And I like how he thinks just the fact that he brought up the fact that there were thousands of people there, that's reason enough for John McCain being wrong. In his mind, he's like, ah, proven wrong. See, thousands of people were supporting me. Therefore, they can't be crazies. Obviously, thousands of people can be fucking crazy. I mean, I would argue just the fact that the overwhelming majority of the world is religious, that shows people are a little crazy. But we don't even need to go to that extreme. I mean, you could point at, you know, the fucking North Korean regime and say, that shows that people have the capacity to be crazy, and plenty of people believe that he really is like a demigod or something like that. What, thousands of people showed up to your rally, therefore they can't be crazy. Even if fucking millions of people showed up to your rallies, that wouldn't mean that they're not crazy. Of course, bad ideas can spread. I mean, it's not... He thinks it's a Trump card, man. Isn't that a classic fallacy, like argument ad populum or something? Like, oh, a lot of people believe it, so it must be true. There was a time when, you know, everybody thought the world was flat. Everybody. It was like 100%. 100% of people thought the world was flat. That doesn't then therefore mean that the world is flat. So you could look at thousands of people in the audience, and just because they're in front of you, just because they're there, doesn't they can't be crazy, they're here. Doesn't mean anything. What are you saying? So John McCain, he also said to John McCain, quote, McCain should be defeated in the primaries. Graduated last in his class at Annapolis. Dummy! What a loser he is. He can't help but... All he reverts to is just name-calling. And it's not even like, okay, so he finished last in his class at Annapolis. That's not good. The dude now is how old? 117? That's how far back you're going in his past in order to make some sort of a point against him? And by the way, if you want to look in people's pasts, easy, son. Glass house you're in there. You went bankrupt at least 5 times. Your companies did. Oh, I'm a business genius. So when people point out in the debates, hey, Donald, you went bankrupt 5 times. You're not a business genius. Your businesses went bankrupt at least 5 times. Is that going to be a fair point against you, big guy? Or are you going to say, oh, that makes sense? And again, you're saying, oh, look at this guy. What an idiot. You were born on third base, and you thought you hit a triple. Your dad was worth $400 million. You had a $400 million head start. Guess what? If you give me a $400 million head start, not only will I be incredibly successful financially, I won't go bankrupt at least 5 times. And then there's Rick Perry. We haven't even gotten to the best part yet. Rick Perry said about Donald Trump that he's nothing but, quote, a toxic mix of demagoguery and nonsense. I actually like the way he worded that. Now, of course, it is hilarious coming from Rick Perry, because you could easily say about Rick Perry he's a toxic mix of demagoguery and nonsense. And also, plus, on top of that, being a huge corporate shill. He just wants to be a puppet for corporate America. That's why he's running. Okay? But it's a good, you know, hit at Trump. So how did Trump respond? Oh, this is the best, he says, quote, Governor Perry just gave a pollster quote on me. He doesn't understand what the word demagoguery means. I don't know. He probably doesn't. Okay, that's true. But I don't know how you were able to ascertain that from what he said here. Then he says, Governor Perry failed on the border. He should be forced to take an IQ test before being allowed to enter the GOP debate. Oh. Oh, oh, oh. All right, point number one is, again, I don't know how those two things are linked. he failed on the border, therefore he needs an IQ test. You could be somebody who makes an intellectual argument for open borders and be really smart. So you don't necessarily have to give a fuck about the border in order to be smart, so I don't really see a connection there. But you, Donald fucking Trump is saying to people, you need to take an IQ test. Okay, that is the glassiest glass house I've ever seen in my life. Not only is the house made of glass, like the walls and whatnot, the foundation is made of glass, they somehow have glass doorknobs in this glass house. The fucking roof is made of glass. Every part, they have glass nails for this house. Everything is glass. This entire house is totally, that's such a glass house comment that he might have to take a bath in liquid glass and just let it fucking set around him. Is that even a thing, by the way? I don't know if liquid glass is a thing. Don't quote me on that. Donald Trump is going to talk about other people's IQ. The funny thing is, again, to be clear, it's probably true of Rick Perry that he's struggling in the IQ department. I've made that argument myself. When you have to, you know, turn to, I'm wearing glasses now. You guys think I'm smart? I got glasses on. When you have to revert to that, oh, God, that's so sad. Because you don't have any real policy ideas and you're not smart. So you got to turn to shit like that to try to trick people. But Donald, I mean, you're a walking, talking caricature of a human being. You embody every negative stereotype about Americans. You know, a greedy capitalist pig, buffoon, narcissist, overestimates his own, power and overestimates his own perceptions of himself and his ability. Dude, you need an IQ test as well. You're also an idiot. Seriously? Anytime anybody has that such a low social IQ where they're incapable of understanding how they're perceived by everybody else, that is a telltale sign of low IQ, because that mindset doesn't just exist socially. If you can't understand how people perceive you socially, do you think Donald Trump is a guy who's able to, you know, be critical of himself in an objective way, where he turns the criticism inward, where he's yelling at everybody and pointing fingers, you're bad at this, you're bad at that, fuck you, you're a dummy this, you're a dummy that. Is he able to do that and turn it inward and say, well, let me examine, what's my own moral code? What's my own belief system? You know, am I right about things? Am I wrong about things? Let me go through, all of my opinions with a fine-tooth comb here and be self-critical. That's what an intelligent person would do. Is he capable of doing that? Believe me, if this guy acts as he acts in society and he's totally unaware how other people view him, there's no way he's critical with his own moral code and his own belief system. He's a fucking buffoon. He's a low IQ buffoon. But I have to say, I enjoy so much watching two idiots spar back and forth, Rick Perry and Donald Trump. You know, I told you guys, it was just last week that the Republican donors, the billionaires, were like, guys, please stop fighting. You look stupid. You have to stop doing this. Stop. It turns out that there are going to be some people who don't get that memo. You saw that the ones who actually are smarter, the smarter Republicans, not to say their policies are good, but they're smarter Republicans, Chris Christie, Jeb Bush, they listened. In fact, Chris Christie almost flat out said it when he was on Fox News the other day. He's like, I don't want to attack the other people, speaking about Trump. Jeb Bush, same thing. He's trying to sidestep now whenever they bring this up. They're like, okay, we get the message. We know you're our boss and we're your bitch. We got you. Trump and Perry, like, oh, take a fucking IQ test, you goddamn idiot, you moron, dummy. I'm going to put more stuff on Twitter, because that's what serious people do. Okay. All right, now, got to bring the mood right back down. Tennessee. Let's go to Tennessee. Actually, after I button my shirt, I hope my shirt was not unbuttoned this entire time. I don't need you guys to see my belly as I'm trying to talk to you about finance and terrorism and all types of shit. Okay. So there was a terror attack in Tennessee yesterday. Four Marines were shot dead after a gunman opened fire on two military facilities in Chattanooga. The shooter was also killed, and three people, including a police officer, were injured. I think one of them is still fighting for their life, and the other one, I think it was the officer, just had it was shot in, like, the ankle and is going to make a full recovery. Mohammed Youssef Abdulaziz carried out the attacks. It lasted for about 30 minutes before he was killed, and it's unclear at this point if he shot himself or if he was shot by the police. Now, let me tell you more about the motive here. Quote, Abdulaziz was a naturalized U.S. citizen and was born in Kuwait. He graduated from the University of Tennessee in 2012 with a degree in electrical engineering and had been active in MMA and sports during high school. Police reportedly arrested Abdulaziz for a DUI in April in Chattanooga. So when he was arrested, he allegedly also smelled like marijuana, and he refused to take any kind of drug test. And he had remnants of cocaine on his face as well. Now, he argued, I was snorting caffeine. Doesn't make it much better, but I don't believe you either. I think it was cocaine. And the Daily Beast really dug into his blog and took away from reading his blog that this incident in his life was a big turning point for him. So before this run-in with police, he had a clean record. And again, he, you know, graduated from college and seemed to fit in. But at this point, so after the run-in with police, he was unemployed and he had no girlfriend. People around him were getting married. He wasn't. And he basically used that incident as a wake-up call to become more religious. In fact, specifically, he used that to become more of a fundamentalist. And understand that that's not me speaking, it's him. So one of his headlines on his blog was Understanding Islam, the Story of the Three Blind Men. And in that post, he declared that, quote, the original disciples of the prophet were not like priests living in monasteries. Every one of them fought jihad for the sake of Allah. Okay, that's not good. If this is the stuff that you're writing and this is the stuff that you believe, and you're saying, hey, look, this incident in my life woke me up. In the Daily Beast, they point out that he viewed this as like, oh, my God, I strayed away from my moral code by doing drugs and by falling into the materialistic lifestyle. And after that, he turned to a hardline interpretation and a fundamentalist interpretation of Islam, and he didn't want to stray from the actual tenets that are laid out there in the Quran and in the Hadith. So the second post that they dug into, the headline was, A Prison Called Dunya. Now, that term apparently means it's used to refer to the material world. So when somebody says a prison called Dunya, a prison called the material world, essentially, is what he's saying. Again, I don't like the direction you're going here. The material world can be a fucking beautiful place, and you should try to live as happily and productively as you can in the material world. Let me give you some more specifics. Here's what he said, quote, know that the life of this world is but amusement and diversion and adornment and boasting to one another and competition in increase of wealth and children, like the example of a rain whose resulting plant growth pleases the tillers, then it dries and you see it turned yellow, then it becomes scattered debris. What is the worldly life except the enjoyment of delusion? Brothers and sisters, don't be fooled by your desires. This life is short and bitter, and the opportunity to submit to Allah may pass you by. Take his word as your light and code, and do not let other prisoners, whether they are so-called scholars or even your family members, divert you from the truth. If you make the intention to follow Allah's way 100% and put your desires to the side, Allah will guide you to what is right. So all this evidence was there. It was all on the blog. In fact, there's another heartbreaking aspect of the story. When he put the quote about how meaningless life is, and it's like when you plant a flower and the flower grows and the flower dies, what was the point of it existing anyway because it's dead now? When he put that up, his mom tried to, I don't know if you can say, like, talk him down from the edge, but, like, she posted some sort of picture online where it was flowers that he gave to her. And she was like, oh, my beautiful son, you know, gave me these flowers, and I want to thank him so much. And he just turned away completely from the material world, turned away from his family, turned away from his friends. And again, he laid out in pretty strong detail here what his philosophy was. He's saying that worldly life, what is worldly life except the enjoyment of delusion? You have to follow Allah 100%. That's his words, not my words. These are his words. So what's the takeaway from this, man? Look, the only possible takeaway that we can have based on this evidence right now is that this is a clear example of somebody who is brainwashed by fundamentalist religion. They believe it 100%, and they act in accordance with those beliefs. Now, again, I want to, talking specifically to people on the left here, I want to explain something to you guys. Don't lose credibility by taking a story like this and trying to make it about things that it's not about. Okay, if you want to have a conversation about the failures of U.S. foreign policy leading to more jihadists and leading to an increase in radicalization in certain places in the Middle East, we can have that conversation, and in that conversation, there are many good points to be made. I always say, I don't blame the Palestinians at all for turning to fundamentalist religion, because those are the only people that are saying, hey, we want to give you the right to self-determination, and we want to give you a state, and we want to make you more free. So we're the more militant ones, turn to us, and we'll defeat the goddamn occupiers. So when Palestinians get more radicalized, you see the roots of it, and you understand, oh, this really does stem from poverty and degradation and politics and economics and other factors like that. Same with Iran. The rise in radicalization in Iran was directly tied to U.S. foreign policy because the only place that the Shah was not able to spy on people as effectively was in the mosques. So people would meet in the mosques to plan a revolution because they wanted to get rid of the fucking dictator. So as a direct result of U.S. intervention and dictatorship, it led to the increase in radicalization in Iran. So those are two examples where it's perfectly clear that you could say, yeah, the problem was U.S. foreign policy, or it certainly contributed to the problem of increased radicalization. With this story right here, with the evidence we have so far, that is not the case. That is not the case. The case is you have an individual who was raised in the West, had opportunity, went to school, was in Western life, and still chose, because he was down on his luck briefly, fuck it, now I'm going to believe wholeheartedly a fundamentalist interpretation of religion, and I will use this ideology as my vessel to do evil and to do wrong and to murder and be a terrorist. So a good way of viewing this specific terrorist is, this is essentially the Muslim fundamentalist version of Dylann Roof. So like when we spoke about Dylann Roof, what was the point I made? I said, look, this is essentially he's a fundamentalist Confederate, okay, where he believes in a strict, literal interpretation of the Confederacy and of white supremacy. He's open about that. He wrote about it. He had a manifesto. And he said, these are my beliefs, here's why I'm doing it, I want to have a new Confederacy, I love Rhodesia, I love apartheid South Africa, I hate black people, these are my beliefs, this is my ideology. Now, he was an awkward loser, which pushed him in that direction, but that's the same thing with this guy. He was an awkward loser, and the ideology pushed him in the direction of doing wrong and doing terrorism. So, I'm pleading for people on the left, don't fall into the trap where you try to make this about something it's not about, because then you're going to lose, people are going to look at you like you're a crazy person. People are going to look at you like you're making excuses. People are going to look at you like, you know, you're not being honest about the roots of terrorism. And by the way, there are plenty of examples of the roots of terrorism being tied to a reaction to bad foreign policy or to oppression and things of that nature. That exists. And when those stories come up, we talk about it. But there are also plenty of examples of the roots of terrorism not necessarily being oppression, but the roots of terrorism being any individual falling in love with and becoming obsessed with a terrible interpretation and a fundamentalist interpretation of various religions. In this case, it's Islam. Like I said, we've discussed it when it comes to Christianity. We also discuss it when it comes to, again, a fundamentalist interpretation of white supremacy or believing in a new version of the Confederacy or things of that nature. So again, we have to be fair, we have to be objective, we have to look at the evidence, and we have to see what the evidence tells us. And in this particular case, it is quite clear. The problem is fundamentalist religion. The problem is not U.S. foreign policy. The problem is not hey, let's blame poverty, let's blame this, let's blame that. Those cases do exist, and they're very vast, and we cover them all the time. That's not the case here. The case here is the problem of people actually believing a narrative and a story and a belief system that is untrue. The irony is, he's saying here, the problem is the real world is delusion. Quote, what is the worldly life except the enjoyment of delusion? Wrong, 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 wrong. What you did is the enjoyment of delusion. In your mind, you said, because of my fundamentalist interpretation of religion, I know I am right to go and kill innocent people and do terrorism. You're the one that's deluded. You're the one that thinks you're going to a place where you're going to get a bunch of virgins and that, you know, you're right in your literal interpretation of religion. You're the one that's deluded. It's not delusional at all to say, hey, we should try to enjoy our life on this planet while we're here, because this is all we know for sure that there is. Maybe there's something after, but we don't know. There's no evidence for it. So the people on this earth, secular people, non-religious people, moderate religious people, they're the people who are much living in delusion, much less than you are. You're the one who wholly embraced delusion, as you accused other people of embracing delusion, which, again, more irony here is, you're the one that was the most immoral, as you're accusing other people, moderate religious people, secular people, worldly people, of being immoral. No, no, no. They were the moral ones. You were the immoral one. Okay. Next. Let's go to Scott Walker, and then I got to take a final break here. So I'm going to give you exactly how you shouldn't respond to this attack. Scott Walker is going to respond to yesterday's terror attack in the worst possible way. Let's watch.
What more could we be doing, should we be doing here domestically to help the FBI, once these people get here, from unleashing hell?
Well, that sort of response is just absolutely unacceptable. Our primary responsibility at the federal government level shouldn't be in all these other programs and services we provide. It should be to protect our national security interests, to keep us safe and sound here in America.
But how?
And to do what's necessary around the world. Well, I think it's another thing. I was one of the people who spoke up and said we should have reauthorized the Patriot Act. I think we need to have the resources there, and I think this is worth reexamining. I think we need to give resources where appropriate, not only the FBI, but in other levels of the federal government, to make sure that we can actually protect not just the men and women in uniform, but Americans here. We are under threat. Again, this is like a virus, and if we don't take it out completely, it's going to keep coming back and attacking the host.
We knew it was going to happen. It started happening on day one. So what's his response? Take away your rights. Give away all your rights. Shut up. Don't think. Forget the Constitution. Give me all your rights and let me do whatever the fuck I want. And give me a green light to be more of a tyrant. I'm running for president. I want to be president. When I get there, I want to be a tyrant. Give me a green light to do that, and my justification will be sometimes terrorism happens, so it's justified. No, 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 no. This is the exact wrong response to a terror attack. And also, notice, now you guys know I said when we covered the story, it's of course it is a terrorist attack. He has a political and religious ideology, and he killed people. But notice how Fox News and Scott Walker immediately fine with calling this a terror attack. Did they call it when it was Dylann Roof? A guy who, again, had a political motivation. He loved apartheid. He loved Rhodesia. He wanted a new Confederacy. He hated black people. He believed his core in white supremacy. He attacked a historic black church. Was it terrorism when Dylann Roof did it? Nope. Shooting, maybe a hate crime, but not even that. Definitely not terrorism. Shut the fuck up. But when it's a Muslim terrorist, immediately they call it terrorism. Now, again, they should call it terrorism. It is terrorism. But you do see that they're hypocrites because they're not willing to call it terrorism when it's Dylann Roof. What did we do? We called this one terrorism because it is. We called his terrorism because it was as well. And then also, again, notice there's no objectivity in what they get outraged over and what they get angry at. Megyn Kelly's like paranoid there, and she's panicking. She's like, what do we do to help the FBI to stop these people from unleashing hell when they get here? You don't have anything like that to say when it's 32,000 people that die every single year simply because of gun violence in America. And by the way, he also used a gun in this case too. But you got nothing to say about guns, and 32,000 people die as a result of guns in America every single year because of everything, accidents, homicides, suicides, you name it. 32,000, they don't have anything to say about guns. If it's just your run-of-the-mill regular murder where six people die, here's the Fox News reaction. Cover for 3 minutes, move along. But if it's, again, they're able to point their finger at Muslims in this case, so they're like, let's cover this one nonstop and fearmonger. Again, Megyn Kelly just said, what should we do to help the FBI once these people get here from unleashing hell? Who's these people? What the fuck are you talking about? They did this segment, by the way. Now, we don't know if he was connected to any international terror group. Either way, it is terrorism because he did it for a political ideology and a religious ideology. But we don't know if he's connected to any terror group, and they definitely didn't know when they did this. But she's saying, well, what do we do to stop these people from unleashing hell when they get here? Who are these people? See, you know who they're referring to. You know what they mean. They make it crystal clear all the time. Bob Beckel on Fox News said it during the Boston bombing. He said, we need to not allow any more Muslim immigrants in our schools. So get rid of no more Muslim immigrants, no more Muslim immigrants, because one person, the Boston bomber, did the terror attack. So when they say, well, we're not blaming all Muslims for the actions of a Muslim, that's exactly what you're doing. You said it. You told us. That was your argument. Okay? Peter King argues all the time, we need to do nothing but spying on that community. Did you say that when it came to extreme right-wingers after Dylann Roof did his attack? Did you say we should spy on all right-wingers? No. But again, they're letting you know what their true goal is, and they're letting you know that their response is the exact wrong response. You're not supposed to, you know, take away people's right to privacy when something like this happens and continue to spy, and you know what's also coming next. After the further stereotyping of Muslims and lump them all in together, they're at TikTok until they say, well, we probably need to invade a country or two more to stop this virus, as Scott Walker called it. Again, funny it's a virus when it's a Muslim that does it, but it's not a virus at all when it's a neo-Confederate who does it, and it's not a virus when after the neo-Confederate does it, seven black churches burned down in the South. Two of them were arson, by the way, so unrelated, but five were not. I'm sorry, two of them were in arson, five were, okay? So two of them, it was, you know, whatever they say, some sort of accident or lightning in one case. But five of them were arson and were tied to right-wing extremists. But were you saying that's a virus and we need to stop this virus of the ultra-right-wing ideology? No, you didn't say that. Again, only when it's a Muslim you say it. And the reality is you're very comfortable making generalizations and bad policy proposals when Muslims do it. But when right-wingers do it, all of a sudden, it's not even terrorism. It's not terrorism. Maybe it's a hate crime, but maybe not even that. And let's not talk about policy in any way, shape, or form. Okay. Let's take a break when we come back. One more downer story, and then we'll get to some happier stories. Stay right there, guys. Block Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show. Long day. Son of a bitch. All right, we're back, guys. One more downer story, and then we will see if we can't start feeling happier here. We'll find out. Sandra Bland is a 28-year-old woman from Texas, and she was pulled over while she was driving to her new home in Houston for the inexcusable crime of switching lanes without a blinker. Really super serious. They couldn't let that slide. Now, somehow, the situation escalated with officers to the point where they asked her to get out of the car, and they hurt her. They physically hurt her. Now, again, I want to be clear that we don't know what happened at the beginning of the exchange. So anybody who says anything about the way it went down initially, they're making it up, okay? So let's be clear, we simply don't know what happened at the beginning, which led to the end. But when there was a physical altercation actually going on, the officers were on top of her, and you hear her say, quote, "You just slammed my head into the ground. Do you not even care about that? I can't even hear." Now, there is a video of the end part of the exchange, but I can't play it here for you guys for copyright reasons, but I'll leave a link in the description and you could check it out yourself. So she's screaming about how they're hurting her, and apparently they don't care, and they take her into custody at Waller County. And fast forward a day after they take her into custody, and she's dead. She died in custody. So what was the cause? Quote, "The Waller County Jail is trying to rule her death a suicide." So let me tell you a little more about her so you get a better picture of the kind of person we're dealing with here. She had just gotten a new job at her alma mater, Texas Prairie View A&M. She had no history of anxiety or depression or mental illness or anything like that. And she's described as, quote, "a very outspoken individual who loved life, went to church, and loved her family." Oh, and there's one more thing I should add here. She was a vocal advocate against police abuse and misconduct. But it's okay, though, because at least we know for sure that the police have proof that this was indeed a suicide, right? Quote, "Authorities told reporters there are no cameras in her jail cell and no footage of her death." They haven't really presented any evidence either. There's, oh, yeah, she's dead, look away, who cares? Come on, man. Think about how this all started. This all started because they pulled her over because she didn't use a blinker when she switched lanes. Number one, you can kind of let that one slide, okay? So you didn't have to pull her over at all. But if you're going to pull her over, I mean, what's the worst that happened? The police officer went up to the window, said something, and I'm being as kind as I can to the cops here. The police pulls her over, says something, and she gives them lip because she's angry she got pulled over for something so ridiculous, which is understandable. And she's, you know, she's angry. She curses at an officer, says something the officer doesn't like. You know what a normal human being does at that point in time when they know they're wearing a badge and they have a responsibility to uphold the law and to not get their emotions involved? They write a ticket and then they move along. Or, again, you probably just let it slide. It's a fucking switch. It's switching lanes without your blinker. But somehow this all spiraled out of control where they physically hurt her, put her in jail, and she died. And she died. There's another aspect to the story. The person who's the head of this police department was fired from his last job for overt racism. Gets even better. The person who's supposed to be doing the internal investigation into what happened here also has a history of racial problems. Are we living in the fucking Twilight Zone, man? When I went through all the facts of this story, I immediately thought of the former Baltimore cop who was just on Joe Rogan's podcast, who kind of said more or less, yeah, every single thing the black community has been saying for the last few decades, totally true. Totally true. He's like, we're an invading army. We're kind of paid to shake down that community in particular. You know, we treat the upper middle class white people in the suburbs the way that cops are supposed to act to everybody. But they're told for revenue reasons and for the, you know, prison industrial complex, you got to go to the black communities, you got to arrest them, you got to stay on top of them, you got to over-police that community. I mean, the drug war, basically, according to him, he says, that gives us an excuse to do whatever the fuck we want to any of them. I mean, we do illegal searches all the time, but they're like borderline legal illegal, so we just, you know, make up a part of the story to make it so it would have been legal, even though the search was illegal. They do that shit all the time. Look, man, I have no idea. I don't have a fucking crystal ball. I'm not a demigod. I don't know what the fuck happened. I don't think anybody knows exactly what happened and how this unfolded. But at the very least, it is incredibly suspicious, and the federal government should get involved, and there should be special prosecutors involved in this, and they should really, really, really go through with a fine-tooth comb, because at least at face value here, this looks very suspicious. And there's a high likelihood that there was foul play involved. And nobody should be satisfied with the answers that we've gotten so far. Because the way the entire thing unfolded is inexcusable. And we need to do something about it. And we also need to change the training of the police officers and the laws so you take away their green light to continue to harass people. Now, again, I know in this case it wouldn't have changed much. But for the broader picture here in stopping police from harassing the black community, you got to end the drug war. You got to end the drug war. You got to end, you know, the civil asset forfeiture nonsense. You got to end wherever there are stop and frisk laws, and you have to end the drug war. Because once you say it's okay to lock people up for doing a substance, well, then you've given yourself a green light to go after virtually anybody in the community, because so many people, white and black, use illegal drugs like marijuana, and they're not doing it because they're bad people. They're doing it because it's just another intoxicant like alcohol, for example. Problem is, they throw you in a fucking cage if you use marijuana. So you've given, you know, the entire police department in specific communities a green light to go after people when they really should not go after people. And we have to change the mindset of officers looking at poor people, looking at black people, looking at minorities as the other. Because if you continue to look at them like the other, you'll treat them like the other, and the results are what we're seeing here. Okay. Newser is reporting on a fascinating new study which discovered another benefit to marijuana. They say, quote, researchers discovered that cannabidiol, or CBD, worked wonders for rats with broken limbs. When rats with mid-femoral fractures were given CBD, the healing process was markedly enhanced within just 8 weeks. So the study was published in the Journal of Bone and Mineral Research, and the researchers say the healing properties of CBD remained even when the non-psychotropic compound was separated from the THC. So what that means is it's like the CBD oil. It doesn't even get you high. You know, it's like hemp, for example, a plant that's related to marijuana, but it's not exactly the same, and it doesn't get you high, but it's still banned because it's related. Because we live in a world with stupid people who's related to it. It don't even get you high, but we're going to ban it anyway, or maybe it'll get you high or something. Jesus Christ. It's so silly to think that people are still arguing over, should we legalize this CBD oil to treat kids with seizures? And it doesn't even get them high? It's just medical treatment? I don't know. It's kind of similar to other stuff that gets people high. Keep it banned. Oh. They say, quote, and the treatment did more than just mend bones. The compound made bones stronger during healing. That means the limb will be harder to break in the future. All right, I have to admit, and you guys know, I'm not even a fan. I don't even smoke weed recreationally. For whatever reason, it's just not my drug. Okay, I don't like the way it makes me feel. I prefer other drugs. Different conversation for another day. But the reality is, we're talking about a drug that helps so many different issues. So many. We covered the story about a year ago. There was a prominent study that came out which found that marijuana actually helps with fighting certain kinds of cancer. What? I mean, that's ridiculous. It helps with that. It helps with seizures, like we were saying before. So many kids with seizures have been given this, and it's changed their life completely. We covered another story of a specific kid on that a few weeks ago. I mean, the list of stuff where people say, it worked wonders for me. Even, you know, troops that have PTSD, some of them tried a variation of different pharmaceutical drugs, didn't work for them. By the way, those drugs do work for some other people, so I'm not knocking the pharmaceutical drugs. What I am saying is with some people, the pharmaceuticals didn't work. And then they tried marijuana, and they were like, okay, no, this works. I've had people reach out to me that since I do my show. They say, oh, can I tell you my story? Like, I couldn't find anything that helped me get over my depression or my anxiety or this or that. I tried marijuana. It's the only thing that works for me. Look, man, some people are wired a certain way where they respond in a much better way with that drug than any other drug, and it helps with a variety of different things. This idea of using it is something worthy of taking away your freedoms. If you think about it, it's like a medieval dumb idea, not just this regular dumb idea. It's like a medieval kind of draconian dumb idea. Of, like, restrict your freedom because you dare to tweak your consciousness in a positive way. Shouldn't we all want to? Isn't that the reason why a lot of people drink coffee? They're a little tired. I want to pep my mood up. Have some coffee, and now I work. Everybody, oh, yay, coffee. Everybody's happy about that. Go out for a few beers after work. Oh, yay, beer. Everybody's happy about that. But I want to just try this other one that tweaks my consciousness in a slightly different way. Marijuana. Oh, God, but lock them up. Where they call the cops? What, do we have a terrorist on our hands here? Ooh. How fucking stupid we are. We've crafted a society that logically makes no sense. Try to explain it to an alien. They go, huh? Wait. So that substance is on a pedestal, but it's actually worse because more people die taking it, and you get more aggressive when you drink that substance, alcohol. But when people do marijuana, it actually calms them down more. They don't fight as much. It changes your consciousness in a different way, but that one you get thrown in jail. I can't figure it out. These human things are really dumb. That's how an alien would respond. And now we know it's not just like this neutral, benign substance. It also, in many ways, helps with actual medical conditions. To, at the very least, not have medical marijuana legal in all the states is ridiculous. But, moreover, what you should do, of course, is at least decriminalize, but you guys know I prefer legalize, because I believe in this radical thing called freedom. Call me crazy. Next. Now we go to South Carolina. There's a story coming out of South Carolina today that's so ridiculous that it feels like a story from The Onion. Raw Story explains here, they say, quote, nearly 40,000 people have signed on to a petition to remove the African-American monument from the South Carolina State House grounds. Confederate flag was taken down. So the monument that they want to take down is a slavery commemoration piece. What they're doing here is a textbook example of false equivalence. They're saying, oh, the Confederate flag is offensive to black people, so okay, I guess we take that down. But hey, that slavery memorial is offensive to white people, so I guess we need to take that down too, right? No. Notice, again, they always try to make it equal. There was some bad stuff racially amongst whites and some bad stuff amongst blacks. No. Look at the history. The history is clear. There was not an alternate history where white people were the ones who were slaves. White people were the ones who were victims of Jim Crow in America. White people were the ones who were victims of segregation. White people were systemically kept away from economic power and advancement in America. That doesn't exist. The reality is the opposite. White people had the power. They kept black people down. That is a fact. So when you say, oh, it's equal, that offends them, this offends us, take both down. No. One is okay because it represents something in history that is true and factual and was a fight against oppression. The other just represents the oppression. Take down the thing that represents the oppression. Keep up the thing that represents the fight against the oppression. Let me tell you what the person who came up with the petition, I want to give you his quote. His name is Keith Harmon. He said, The African American Monument depicts slave ships, mistreatment, and words such as segregation and Jim Crow. This being the case, it is undeniable that this monument can and does serve to invoke in the white community feelings of shame, humiliation, and offense, serving as a constant reminder of the dark history of slavery. Now here's the best part, he says. He said he hoped both Confederate and slave monuments would remain on the State House grounds, but he said the African American monument should go if the Confederate flag goes. Again, perfect example of false equivalence. And notice how he tries to flip the meaning of the slave commemoration monument. No, you know what I think as a normal white person? You know what I think when I look at that? Oh, man. First of all, it's historic. It's factual. And it is educational. So you look at that and you go, okay, I acknowledge the history. I'm sensitive to the history. And I know that it's good that we know about it so it doesn't happen again. Okay, same thing with like World War II memorials. When you discuss the Holocaust, should German people say, "Oh, don't you dare talk about that. I get angry when you talk about that." Why would you get angry? Why would you feel that way? Unless the ones who are angry about that are kind of like, "I actually do feel somewhat responsible, and maybe it's a more muddled history than as clear as we're the bad guys, they were the good guys." See, that's the thing. I feel like when people get defensive about stuff like that, I always think, what's your real motive here? Are you really getting all standoffish because in your mind you think, like, it was more complicated than that. We weren't just the bad guys. They weren't just the good guys. Is that what you think? I think that that's what you think. Again, normal people like myself, I look at that and I go, oh, no, yeah, black people were the oppressed. White people were the oppressors. Noted. Fact. Now let's move forward. Having learned that and grow from there, they can't do that. They don't want to grow. Okay, they want to do a false equivalence. Black people are offended by the Confederate flag. We're offended by the slave monument. Take them both down. No, one represents the oppressor, one represents the oppressed. Get rid of the one that represents the oppressor. Do not get rid of the one that represents the oppressed because it's a reminder and it's factual and it's reality. And we can learn from it and move forward, which clearly you don't want to do. Next. Republican lawmakers introduced a bill in Kentucky that would allow county clerks to opt out of marrying gay couples. Now, this comes directly after one of the county clerks threw a tantrum, basically, and said that he refused to marry gay people. And then the Democratic governor had to come out, Governor Beshear, and say, "You don't have a choice. Stop. You have to." So the guy said, "No, I still refuse." That guy's name is Casey Davis, and I want to give you one of his quotes. He said, "Nature's law will supersede any law that man puts on a piece of paper. That's why I've taken the stand that I have taken. I don't agree that this lifestyle agrees with nature's law." Well, that's interesting. It's not your job to interpret anything about natural law. Your job as the county clerk is to do as you're fucking told, bitch. Fall in line. And by the way, it's not against nature. If being gay was against nature, perhaps it wouldn't occur in nature. Mind blown. If it's unnatural, why the fuck does it occur in nature? It is by definition natural if it occurs in nature. It's natural for a certain percentage of the human population to be gay or be bisexual. We know because that's how it is. Yeah, I don't think it's natural law, even though it's literally natural. I don't think it's natural law, so I'm against it, so I'm not going to do my goddamn job. How is that any different from a Muslim who works at a grocery store and says, "I refuse to handle the bacon, I refuse to handle the alcohol"? Okay, you're fired. You don't want to do your, don't sign up for the fucking job if you don't want to do the job. That's like me saying I wanted to be a professional golfer at one point. That's like me going to the PGA Tour and go, "Okay, I want a job and play golf, but hire me." How are you going to be a professional golfer if you don't play golf? It's my beliefs, so deal with it. Pay me. It's stupid when you boil it down to what the scenario really is. You're dealing with a dumb person here. That's what you're dealing with. So here's what my response would be. You're fired. And also, none of these guys, all the Republican lawmakers, and there are multiple ones that are signing on together to present this bill here, none of them understand how the country works. You idiots, the Supreme Court just heard the case. They just heard it. And they said gay marriage is a constitutional right under the 14th Amendment. Equal protection. Everybody gets treated equally. That means we need to allow gay marriage. They just ruled on it. And you say, we disagree. We want to pass a law here at the state level that says no. But you can't do that. Whatever law you're going to pass, it's already null and void. Because the Constitution, which is supreme law, it's law above federal law and your puny state laws. It says you can't do that. So they love to scream about the Constitution. They have no fucking clue how the Constitution works. They have no clue what's in it. They have no clue how it's interpreted. Okay, we don't like the fact that gay marriage is now allowed, so we're going to pass a law against it at the state level. Irrelevant. That's fucking irrelevant. It's like after the Supreme Court decided that it's unconstitutional to do segregation, another state like Mississippi coming up with a bill a week later saying, we're going to just do segregation. We're going to bring that back. They just ruled against it. It's not like they could rule against it and you just say, we disagree. It doesn't matter if you disagree. You are underneath them. That's the way the Constitution really works. But again, I said it once, I'll say it again, they're fired. Simple as that. Even if they change their mind now and said, okay, fine, I'll do it. You twisted my arm. I'll marry the gay people. I said, no, you're fired. You already gave me shit. You already told me you're not really willing to do your job. So you're going to do it with an angry look on your face. So I'm doing you a favor. I'm going to stop you from doing something that you don't want to do. You're fucking fired. Go look for a job somewhere else. All right. Next. Representative Scott Garrett, a Republican of New Jersey, has stated that he will not pay his dues to the Republican campaign's committee? No, son. Sorry, my bad. Fail. It's a different group I never heard of. Republicans campaign arm? Whatever. Fail. Try that again. Representative Scott Garrett is a Republican in New Jersey, and he stated that he's not going to pay his dues to the Republicans campaign arm because apparently they've tried to recruit and support openly gay candidates. He's so outraged that some Republicans might want to run gay candidates. He's like, I refuse to partake in this, or I refuse to be affiliated with this, or I refuse to pay my dues. And let's be clear. If they actually do that, why would they do that? The old token trick. Like when Republicans run a black person. Ah, see? The Negroes like us too. We have one that's running. Will you guys vote for us? Well, no. Your policies are anti the black community, so no. We have a woman running. Look, Michelle Bachmann's running. I guess all the women in the country should vote for us. She's a woman. Vote for her. It's not the way it works. They know that your policies suck, so they're going to vote against you. But anyway, I digress from that. Think Progress reports, they say, quote, such an accusation reportedly made other Republicans angry, and they pointed out that the National Republican Campaign Committee doesn't get involved in primaries or have a litmus test on candidates' sexual orientation. So I love that because Republicans got mad at him, not because of what he said, but they got mad because they were accused of liking gays. Like, no, we don't like them, promise. We don't have that policy in place. But the story gets better. Garrett donated to Richard Tesei in 2012 in his congressional race, and I believe it was in Massachusetts. Tesei is gay. Apparently he didn't know that. And I like how there was one other Republican who brought this up, and he said to him, dude, Tesei was equally as gay when you donated to him, so you shouldn't have a problem with that. So here's what further pisses me off about this. It shows you what his moral code is, okay? This guy truly believes that morality is based on going to church and hating gay people and worshiping Jesus and all types of fucked up stuff. That's either not tied to morality at all, or it's actively immoral. And then meanwhile, he doesn't think morality is stopping war, fighting poverty, helping people, being open-minded and kind to minority communities like gay people. In fact, you really want to know how his moral compass is functioning? He's outraged and he refuses to take part if anybody else even dares to accept gay people. He's angry about that. Meanwhile, Garrett voted against Hurricane Sandy relief funding. I rest my case. And finally, I'm going to run out of time here, but that's all right. I'll be cut off mid-sentence, but you guys will see it later on YouTube, or tomorrow, I should say. Dr. Drew had Breitbart editor Ben Shapiro on his show to discuss Caitlyn Jenner and trans issues. He also had on Inside Edition transgender reporter Zoe Turr, and they had a funny back and forth.
In that piece, you're saying it wasn't a transgender going at their own pace. It was a product rollout. What are the liabilities to the human being, Caitlyn Jenner, as a result of being a part of this product rollout?
Well, you can't sustain that type of energy. You cannot sustain that type of fame. Things shift. You have to reinvent yourself. But I think at some point, this comes crashing down, because along with all this, you know, adulation and hype, eventually you find out if you're really in an existential crisis, because what's my life really going to be like? Will it be, you have to deal with people like this, the hatred, the people that, you know, that come out against you and say,
call you delusional, okay, is that hatred?
Yeah, that's hatred.
Okay.
This is just somebody that's
terrible. I don't hate you.
Of course.
I feel terrible for you.
No, you do hate. You're consumed with hatred. That is who
really?
You are. You're a little
you know
man.
Me?
You're a little man.
Let's stick to the topic. Let's not be personal.
But, I mean, that's okay. He can be whatever he wants. But the point is...
Right. That's what this is all about, isn't it?
It is. It is. But there's ramifications for hate speech. But the point
what
is
are those
that...
ramifications?
Let me finish.
Go ahead. Finish, son.
Little boy.
Zoe.
Okay. Zoe. So, I'm sorry.
It's all everybody. Come on.
We're being pushed.
Go ahead.
I feel wrong for enjoying that as much as I did. But I enjoyed that. Calm down, little boy. Because let's face it, Ben Shapiro does look like a little boy. He's always looked like a little child. He's like 32 years old or some shit. I don't really know how old he is. I'm just guessing. But he's always looked really, really little. So I did find that funny. But look, on the broader question, it is debatable whether or not Caitlyn Jenner should have gotten that award. I don't think it's an open and shut case. There were plenty of other people with incredible stories who also could have gotten the award. With that being said, I'm not, like, anti her getting the award. I think it's fine that she got the award. So there is a debate that's legitimate to be had on that issue, okay? It's not automatic bigotry if somebody opposes her getting the award. But it's funny and true, it happens to be true, that Ben Shapiro indeed is a bigot. Again, the overarching question, it is a debatable issue whether or not she should have gotten the award. There's two sides to that, and it's fine to discuss it. But is Ben Shapiro a bigot? Absolutely, he's a noted bigot. And you even heard a little bit of it there, the condescending, I'm looking down on you point of like, no, I don't hate you. Sure you don't. I have sympathy for you. I feel terrible for you. Nothing to feel terrible about, okay? This is just a person who lives a different way. They're born in a male body, has a female brain, or born as a female, has a male brain. What makes sense is accepting it. And saying, oh, I get it. Some people are different from me. Just because I view the world through a certain set of eyes doesn't mean that is right by definition, because it's who I am and how I do it. Okay? And Ben Shapiro has never understood that. It's not just transgender people he's against. He's against gay people. He's against liberals. He's against anybody. Muslims. He's against anybody who's not exactly like him. So there is a legitimate debate about whether or not Caitlyn Jenner should have gotten the award. But there's not a debate as to whether or not Ben Shapiro is a bigot. He's a well-known bigot, and he does hate. All right, guys. Love you. See you on Monday. Peace.